And now one of the sexiest stories rocking the world of wilderness writers. Quivering loins, heaving bosoms, and a Native American hero chiseled to perfection. Not the things you'd expect to accompany a report on the black-footed ferret. But writer Paul Tolmay found excerpts from an article he wrote about the little weasel, reprinted in Shadow Bear, a romance novel by Cassie Edwards. In one scene from the book, the Indian prince Shadow Bear and his pioneer lover Shiona Bramlett just finish making love when a black-footed ferret makes an appearance and spawns a post-coital conversation about the lifestyles of ferrets, words that appear to be taken verbatim from Tolmay's story. Tolmay wrote about this in Newsweek.com last week. Romance novel readers, we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the two genres coming together? If you want to talk with Paul Tolmay about being plagiarized, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Paul Tolmay joins us from Mainstream Media Studios in Arcata, California, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Good to be here, Neil. I'm glad to be here to talk about 2008's sexiest plagiarism scandal.
The sexiest one so far. It's early in the year.
That's true.
All right. Well, let's talk about, when did you find out about this?
I got an email about a week and a half ago, which directed me toward a website called SmartBitchesTrashyBooks.com, which is a blog that covers the romance novel industry. That blog broke the story of plagiarism, which the Associated Press and the New York Times later picked up on. They had discovered some passages in this breathless novel that mimicked that. Pretty much lifted verbatim some passages I had written for this article, which I had gone to South Dakota in 2005 to research about endangered black-footed ferrets.
So you just you hadn't gotten around to reading Shadow Bear yourself yet.
Correct. And I have to say it's the first romance novel I've ever read and maybe not one of the best examples of the genre.
And nevertheless, you found that, in fact, you go through the dialogue that Shadow Bear and Shiona engage in after they break certain barriers. In any case, you say this is absolutely terrible dialogue, and it's only fair because she didn't write it, you did.
Correct, and I think that's how the blog discovered it. They termed this dialogue as being very didactic, very textbook, and it came from a passage where I was writing about the history of the life history of black-footed ferrets, describing how they came to North America, et cetera, how much they weigh, what they look like, what they eat, et cetera. So in any case, when I got this email, I rushed out and bought a copy of the book. And it has a hunky Lakota chief on the cover. He's sort of a Fabio meets Daniel Day-Lewis in Last of the Mohicans, rippling abs and big pecs, wearing a loincloth. And it's a story of forbidden love between him and this pioneer woman named Shiona Bramlett. In any case, so I flipped through the book, looking for the good parts, obviously. And on page 195, they finally have sex after many false starts. And then a few pages later, while they're chatting, having some pillow talk. Suddenly there's a rustling in the bushes and Shiona Bramlett recoils in fear, thinking it might be the evil Jack Thunderhorse come to steal the map that reveals the location of the secret gold. But no, it's just a family of ferrets rustling around in the bushes, and this launches them into a discussion of ferrets.
They are so named because of their dark legs, Shadow Bear says.
Correct. So they launch into this discussion, which is hard to imagine anybody ever having in a post-coital glow. But it was the real textbook description of the ferrets. I think there was one passage that the media picked up on, if I can find it here. Let's see. I'm sorry, I'm missing it. Well, in any case,
discovered that they are related to minks and otters. It is said their closest relations are European ferrets and Siberian polecats.
Correct. Researchers theorize that polecats crossed the land bridge that once linked Siberia and Alaska to establish the New World populations. The animals breed in March and April, and so on. It was just not very romantic talk.
To which, in your article, you append, "Oh my God, that is so hot."
Correct. When the teepee flaps are knocking or rocking, don't come a knocking.
And how do you think this happened?
I can only guess that, cut and paste plagiarism is pretty rampant from what I hear in colleges and in high schools these days. It's a phenomenon of the internet age. And in any case, I can only imagine that the writer who set this story in South Dakota was looking for some information about the animals of South Dakota and came across my story and simply plunked it into her text.
Little realizing that your story came from another part of South Dakota.
Correct. And she sets it in sort of this Eden-like South Dakota, which doesn't exist, with mossy riverbanks, heavily forested, with wildlife running all around. In the Kanata Basin, where I traveled to research the story, is really it's a stark but beautiful landscape, a windswept grassland right near Badlands National Park. So it is a beautiful but stark place, but no place one would lie down to make love on a mossy riverbank.
So a beautiful South Dakotan did not pull you aside and say, I've read that ferrets stalk and kill prairie dogs during the night using their keen sense of smell and whiskers to guide them through pitch-black burrows. Ferrets suffocate the sleeping prey, an impressive feat considering the two species are about the same weight.
I have not been approached with that dialogue yet, although I have received many breathless emails from romance novel readers who have taken to calling me Ferret Man and are besieging me with requests for pictures of me with my shirt off and a ferret on my shoulder, which I have not complied to give them yet.
If you walked into a bar with some of this dialogue and a ferret on your shoulder, I think you're golden.
I think so. Yes. Well, I guess the point there is that this has exposed me to this whole audience of romance novel readers, which is a massive audience. You know, I write for wildlife and nature and science magazines.
A massive audience too, but
a massive audience as well, but quite separate and apart. And so, to be able to tell the story of endangered ferrets to this romance novel reader audience, which is a passionate and frisky bunch, has been quite an experience and maybe a way for me to share a story with an audience that I might not have otherwise been able to reach.
We're talking with Paul Tolmay, a freelance magazine journalist whose article about the black-footed ferret somehow found its way, at least passages from it, into a steamy romance novel. If you'd like to join our conversation, it's 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Drew, and Drew's with us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Okay.
I am a writer and a musician and also, coincidentally enough, a ferret owner. When I was in reading and in both composing literature and music, I find that I draw from resources and sometimes inadvertently find myself coming across something and I have to say, oh, well, that's already been done. I wanted to know if the writer thought that this plagiarism was flattery or if you take insult to it.
Well, initially I was a little miffed, but then I had to laugh at the absurdity of the situation, simply because it is really kooky to mix endangered ferrets and hot lovemaking. In any case, I was congratulated by some readers for sort of turning lemons into lemonade. I was plagiarized and was able to write this humorous piece detailing how I discovered it. And so I've gotten a lot of positive response for not sort of joining the hue and cry that has erupted in the romance novel blogosphere, right, where people are really angry about plagiarism. I've also received numerous emails from other writers who have said, hey, this happened to me, not in the same circumstances.
So fair plagiarism then.
Plagiarism of all kinds. There are a lot of freelance writers and journalists out there and folks who make their living from the craft of writing. And in the internet era, it's just like the copying and pirating of DVDs, et cetera, abroad. This cut and paste plagiarism seems to be fairly widespread.
Well, it's good to hear that you have such a calm demeanor about it, not some angry backlash to the writer.
Thanks very much for the call. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, well, it's just a chance. You know, I've been a wildlife, I've been a journalist, an environment and wildlife and science writer for over 15 years now, and I've written hundreds, maybe thousands of stories during that time, and never has any piece that I've written gotten such overwhelming response. In the days after my story ran on Newsweek.com, my inbox was literally flooded with emails of all sorts, some from angry romance writers who thought I had disparaged the whole genre of romance novels, to which I have apologized. I've been informed and educated that there are some literate examples of romance novels out there. And I've also gotten lots of emails from wildlife advocates and wildlife lovers, as well as other victims of plagiarism, as I said. So it sort of tapped into these three different subject matters, all with very interested and passionate people.
Drew, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Again, we're talking with Paul Tolmay about his article on the black-footed ferret that found its way into the pages of the romance novel Shadow Bear. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on. This is Larry. Larry with us from South Bend in Indiana.
Hello.
Hi.
I guess my question is, at what point does it become plagiarism? You know, if I'm writing a story and at some point, you know, I need to put in there some factual information about, I don't know, let's just say, you know, a toll road that runs, you know, across northern Indiana, and I read someone's article and I just, you know, throw in the factual information in there. I mean, it's pretty dry content. There's not much literary value to it. So, I mean, how much differently can I possibly restate the fact that this toll road runs, you know, east and west across Indiana?
I don't know. Paul Tolmay, what do you think? Is it when it's cut and pasting, or if he bothers to rewrite it?
Well, I think, yes, that is just exactly it. There were verbatim passages of mine lifted, and I think I'll agree that that is wrong, and that's the definition of plagiarism. So rewriting is something that we all learn from the first research papers that we have to write in school, that you cannot lift another's words. And I'm under no delusions that my words about black-footed ferrets are great literature, which is also why I've been able to laugh at the situation. It really was my job is to convey information, interestingly and entertainingly, about the various wildlife and endangered species I write about. And this section that was lifted was really the more straight-ahead, driest portion of the story, where I was really just giving the background information about ferrets. So I think it is every writer's duty to put information into their own words.
Okay. Larry, thanks very much. Your professors might agree with you, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get – this is John. John with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hey, Neil, great show as usual.
Thank you.
A quick question, and maybe an obvious one. Has the writer tried to reach out to you and make contact, or have you tried to call the writer?
Again, Cassie Edwards, I think is her name.
I did. I explained that in my Newsweek.com story, which is titled Move Over Meerkat Manor, if any of you want to look it up. I did try to call the writer, and I reached her husband, and they declined to comment to me. But at some point, I would like to hopefully speak with the author.
That's a shame.
And let me put this question in another way. Are your people in touch with her people?
No. I'm the only person that has attempted to contact her. I don't really have any peeps other than myself, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. So you're not going to sue her for plagiarism?
No, I haven't even thought about this. Thought about that. My interest really was using this as an opportunity to maybe have a teaching moment to the public about black-footed ferrets, which is this species that really sort of you can't get a species that hovered on the brink of extinction any more closely than black-footed ferrets. As one researcher said, you know, you see those old movies where the hero is running away and he falls off a cliff and he grabs onto a root and he's dangling over a precipice. That's pretty much the story of black-footed ferrets. At one time, there were only 18 left. They were thought extinct for a period of time until a small population was discovered in Wyoming, which kicked off a wholesale effort to capture those remaining animals, bring them into breeding facilities to then propagate more ferrets to be reintroduced into the wild. And this population in Kanata Basin in South Dakota is one of the healthiest populations, and there are several others. The good news is that there are about 1,000 black-footed ferrets now in the wild, all of them reintroduced. Some of the populations are doing well, others not so well. But the take-home message is that this is a species that once covered vast areas of the Great Plains that covered the interior of our nation, and they've been reduced to some very small, tiny corners. And even here, there are conflicts with bringing ferrets back because they rely entirely on healthy prairie dog colonies. They eat prairie dogs. They live in prairie dog holes. And so they're linked to this species, and prairie dogs are a reviled critter on the in the West in a lot of corners. They were eradicated by some estimates as only 2% of the original prairie dog habitat remains. So with their decline, the ferrets disappeared.
And I guess it's good news that that one population of ferrets is doing better. The bad news is I just read that exact passage in a science fiction novel.
Did you? Well, they are doing better, and there are some efforts to reintroduce them into new locations, including even southern Canada in the future.
Paul Tolmay, thanks very much, and we'll look forward to your next work, because who knows what excitement it may bring.
Glad to be here, Neil. And is that a ferret in your loincloth, or are you just happy to see me?
Paul Tolmay, a freelance magazine journalist. He's joined us from the Mainstream Media Studios at Arcata, California. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.